you're down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Occupational therapist Karen Murphy and Director of Clinical Services at Vision Care Optometric Technologies. She will be talking all about vision care today, so stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Okay, that's three. But yes, they are also prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. So folks, come on, listen to me. And learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask? Well, the reason they do that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch! Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that is to go through the grief process. You can't go around it. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You got to go through it. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blogs. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not all about me. It's actually all about you. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, or just CaregiversCaregiver.com for short. And when you go to my website, you'll want to take my short quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. It's about my amazing wife's story. Okay, and mine too. It's still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so please don't miss out on this very informative quiz. It will assess where you are in the burnout process, and the best part is you get my book absolutely free for doing that. Amazon's still selling for almost $10, so it's a great value. All right, I want to take this moment now to thank my last week's guest, Dr. Deborah J. Rivnak, professional speaker, coach, author, special ed teacher, administrator, university professor, and has worked with special needs students. So if you missed this show, you can find it on my website under Uplifting Interviews. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now. Welcome to the show, Karen Murphy. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate you inviting me to be on the call today.
No problem. I really appreciate you coming to join us so that I can interview you today. Why don't you begin, Karen, by telling us a little bit about yourself. Just who is Karen Murphy?
Thank you. So I am an occupational therapist, and I specialized in vision. And that was a decision really made about 10 years ago, but I have very firsthand knowledge. My father was diagnosed with macular degeneration. So I was, throughout life, I watched him struggle with vision loss, not being able to participate in the activities which he found enjoyable. I am an occupational therapist practicing in low vision. Many OTs practice in vision, or they might practice in other areas.
Let's start, because we're talking about macular degeneration. I had to ask you a bunch of questions before the show because that's not my forte. What exactly is age-related macular degeneration in layman's terms so we can understand it? And what are the risk factors?
Okay. Age-related macular degeneration is an eye condition that affects the macula. It's a small area, it's about less than a quarter of an inch, that is in the retina at the back of the eye. Our central vision is involved in the macula, so it allows us to see clearly and to be able to perceive color.
Wow.
Macular degeneration doesn't cause complete blindness, because we are able to still have our peripheral vision, but macular degeneration causes in the center of our vision.
Hmm. Sounds important.
Yeah.
So does
it can be
so
very problematic for people.
Does it make them colorblind also or no?
Well, it doesn't make them colorblind, but what happens is that their perception of color decreases. They might have trouble identifying the differences between brown and black. The colors are, the saturation becomes less. So they can still perceive color, but it's just not as vibrant as what we normally see.
So if I had macular degeneration, I was trying to drive, I would see this big black spot, this black hole in the center of my vision, right?
Right.
I assume a lot of these people keep doing things that they shouldn't, you know, by moving their head up and to the left, trying to get around that black hole. Is that how they kind of survive until they can't do it anymore?
Right. You know, in the initial stages of the disease, those blind spots might be very small, but as the disease progresses, the blind spots get larger. One thing that people can do is they can be trained to use their side vision so that they're not trying to view through those blind spots. And we call that eccentric viewing, and that's part of a rehab program that people can go through. And it depends on the type of macular degeneration that they have, too. There are two forms.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So there are two forms. There's a dry macular degeneration, and that's really about 90% of people have the dry form. It has slower progression, and the blind spots may appear over years. And so people kind of have more time to adjust to, you know, that change in vision. And currently, a doctor, depending on, you know, how far the advancement is, the doctor may, you know, recommend some nutritional supplements that have been shown to decrease the risk of the progression of the disease. And then there's the wet type. So the wet type is only about 10% of people have it, and it's really more damaging to the central or detail vision than the dry form. What happens is abnormal blood vessels that start to grow underneath the retina, and then these blood vessels will start to bleed, which can quickly distort vision, and it's treated generally by injections, or there can be some laser surgery that happens to help the progression of the wet form. The number one risk factor is age, and a third of the adults over the age of 75 are affected by age-related macular degeneration. Mm. And then people who have a family member that has been affected by macular degeneration are more at risk.
Really?
And smoking is also a risk factor, as is prolonged exposure to the sun.
Really? And you don't even have to look at the sun. You just have to be in the sun.
Right.
Huh?
So it's just those UV lights, right? They can damage the retinal tissue just like they can damage our skin.
So there's no cure for this? Once you've got it, it's just going to keep progressing?
Yes, there is no cure.
And nothing to slow it down, drugs, therapy, anything like that?
Well, if you have the wet type, there is the injections. For the dry type, they're really, besides the vitamins, there really were no other surgical options up until recently. An option would be the implantable telescope. But patients can also look and participate in vision rehabilitation, where there are other optical devices, you know, to help them perform their activities.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm a simple kind of fix-it guy. If your eyeball is not working right, I say take it out and put another one in. They can do heart transplants. Can they do eye transplants?
Not yet. I'm sure
really?
That's probably something in the future, but no, not yet.
Wow. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Let's talk about the symptoms. What symptoms would older adults first notice if their vision is getting worse because of it? I think you touched on it a little bit. Did anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, I do. In the early stages, someone may not notice that their vision is changing, but a lot of people initially will come in and they'll talk about this gradual dimming of the vision in the center. or they will talk about distortions in the vision. So straight lines start to appear curvy. So if you're looking at a doorway or maybe like a telephone line, instead of it being straight, it will be curved and wavy.
Really?
Yeah, and so it's just there can also be that sudden loss of vision, too. So if somebody has wet, they might quickly develop a dark or empty area, you know, in the center of their vision. And then, mm-hmm. of course, they can start experiencing those problems with distinguishing between colors. So really, only comprehensive eye examination by an ophthalmologist when the eye is dilated can detect, you know, age-related macular degeneration.
Now, help me with these O words. There's an ophthalmologist, there's an optometrist, and there's another O word that they all mean something different, right? Three different kinds of eye doctors. Explain for those who don't know the difference.
Sure. So an ophthalmologist is a medical doctor, first of all. And so they are the doctors who are diagnosing the eye diseases. They are the ones who would be performing any surgical procedures that might be done. They're giving the injections. An optometrist is another person that can be involved with people with visual impairments, and they're really looking at ways to help the person retain their vision. So they might be, you know, doing education on the macular disease process, and also they'll be looking at best corrected visual acuity, so refractions and glasses and other optical devices that somebody might need or be able to use. And then you have the occupational therapist who we really work hand in hand with the MDs and the optometrists in looking at how the vision is limiting somebody's ability to perform their activities of daily living. We're training them with the optical devices that are prescribed, and we're doing eccentric viewing training with them, really more on a holistic approach. So we're looking at the person, we're looking at their environment, and we're looking at the occupations or activities that they want to engage in.
Mm-hmm. So those vision people at Walmart, are they just selling glasses, or are they a knowledgeable doctor as well?
Oh, well, they're knowledgeable. They're just working, you know, at a different location. Optometrists can be found working in Walmart. They could be working in a clinic for an eye clinic or a hospital. So, you know, they're pretty much in a lot of different areas.
Now, I asked you this before, as far as cataracts. I know a lot of our people do cataracts. You don't get involved with cataracts, right?
The only way that we get involved with cataracts is, you know, I work for Vision Care, so it's the company that makes the implantable telescope. And so if a person gets the implantable telescope, the cataract is removed and the telescope is placed in its stead. So we don't deal with the actual intraocular lenses, the lenses that are put in after the cataracts are removed.
So if a person has macular degeneration, they also happen to have cataracts, which happens, right?
Oh, yeah. It happens. It's very frequent.
You know, my wife is going through, she had one cataract removed about 4 years ago, and now she just had another one. She's still kind of recovering. And I just think it's fascinating what they can do with eyeballs. The surgery and just looking at the picture of the eyeball and the iris and cornea and all of that stuff, I'm just amazed how much treatment is available for eyes.
Yeah.
I'm just amazed. Because it just seems so delicate. I can't imagine someone sticking a needle in my eye or cutting my eye. It was like, oh, my gosh, I can't even think of that. And so I guess you need a pretty good stomach to be an ophthalmologist doing eye surgery. But that's just me.
I completely agree with you. And the technology today is, you know, really, really quite amazing. When you talk about cataract and your wife having her cataract removed, it really does help with the clarity of the vision that you see afterwards and the brightness of the image. Unfortunately, like the patients with macular degeneration whose visual acuity is, you know, around that legally blind range, many of them, when they have their cataracts removed, they don't get that same experience. They might be able to see a little bit more brightness in their mm-hmm. image, but they don't get the clarity that somebody who has, you know, better vision actually sees.
Wow. Well, listen, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk some more, so don't go away.
Thank you.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Karen Murphy talking about macular degeneration and vision care. This is a show to caregivers, as everybody knows. And of course, a lot of caregivers share the same problems, burnout, not taking care of themselves, putting the needs of their loved one above their own needs. And so I would assume, since I've never really met a caregiver caring for someone with macular degeneration, that all of these things are true, right, Karen? How can a caregiver support their loved one in particular with AMD?
So, Dave, everything that you said is absolutely true. Caregivers can get the burnout when they're caring for somebody with visual impairments just as they would caring for somebody else with another disability. Caregivers really do have an important role to play in helping their loved ones manage that diminishing vision. They could look at finding help within the community, but there are simple things that would help that person remain independent within their own home. So we look at adapting the home to ensure that it's safe, and there are different ways to do that. We look at lighting and contrast and safety, right? So some simple things to do would be to improve lighting within the house. And we want to make sure that our loved ones have very even coverage in their rooms with lighting. So we'd use overhead lighting along with tabletop lighting, and then look at doing some task lighting in areas where that person may be writing or doing some medication management, right? That's really important.
Great idea.
And another thing that we can look at doing is particularly around stairs, because we all know that stairs can be a risk for falls, right? So along with making sure that there's good lighting around the stairs, you can also do contrasting tape that we like to do on not only the railings for the person to see, but also at the edge of the steps so that somebody with a visual impairment is able to see that bright color and know where one step ends and the next step starts.
So if the steps are black, you want to put some white tape. White. If they're white, you want to put black tape, et cetera. Great ideas. I hope everyone's taking notes. Great ideas.
Yeah, you can carry that into all the rooms, too. So if you think about the bathroom where a lot of falls happen, you know, in the bathroom. And so using a contrasting tape on the edge of a bathtub so that the person can actually see where that edge is when they're stepping in, and also on their grab bars and their mats in the tub. And you can carry that right on into the kitchen. There are different types of bump dots, adhesive tapes that can be used and placed on the stove dials or the microwave so that, you know, it helps to enlarge those settings so that people can actually continue to use those in meal preparation tasks.
Yeah. I would imagine you see a lot of patients. What are some of the symptoms that someone with macular degeneration can get frustrated with and maybe take it out on their caregiver, making caring a lot more difficult because, you know, of the frustrations of what they're dealing with? You've seen how they react. Usually when a patient comes in, I assume they're with a caregiver of some kind. What have you noticed with the interaction going on between caregivers and the patients? Anything unusual or nothing to talk about?
Well, you know, sometimes a patient, a caregiver will come in and the patient will really be trying to hide their visual limitations, you know. And so that can really set up a scenario where the caregiver is noticing all these things at home that, you know, are kind of falling apart. You know, the bills are stacking up because the patient can't read.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe that person doesn't want to identify with the issues that they're having. And the
denial.
Flip side to that is, denial. The flip side to that might be, you know, a caregiver who's trying to do too much. And, you know, the patient really wants to retain some of that independence, doesn't have the right tasks, you know, or skills to do it at that point in time, but really wants to. So there's that struggle there between, you know, where's the good balance to give the support to the patient, but also allowing them to be independent too.
And how about do you hear the two of them getting to arguments, like a question will be asked and the patient might give you an answer that isn't correct and the caregiver butts in and says, well, that's not right. Now, just say yesterday, remember, blah, blah, blah. You get a lot of those kind of fights where.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, you know, it's commonly around maybe driving. Maybe the patient is at the point where he really needs to think about giving up driving. And, you know, the caregiver is there, you know, trying to get the patient to understand it's time to stop driving and let us help you get around the environment. And driving is something that is really hard for patients, you know, to give up. And so we do see that, and it can be difficult, but it really is, you know, trying to find the balance between the caregiver, the patient, and also the professionals who are working, you know, on that team. Just, you know, you're all there for the best interest of the patient, the person, the loved one.
And it is a lot harder to be a caregiver when you're related to the patient. You find, because there's so many things going on, you know, it all depends on how the relationship is, you know, before the disability. And now you throw that on into the mix and it can sometimes be fireworks. Are most of the caregivers that bring the patients to your place of work kids, relatives, friends, paid caregivers? I mean, what have you noticed?
Yeah, most of them are family members that are bringing caregivers in. And, you know, there's a smaller percentage of paid caregivers that bring them. But for the most part, they're coming in with family members. And, you know, the relationship that you talked about earlier is very much a part of what we see in the clinic setting because, you know, the patient can feel very anxious and depressed with what they're experiencing in their daily life. And they're more active. They're usually will be more prone to act out with a family member, you know, versus a paid caregiver who comes in. Because there's that relationship there.
Now, like you said, there are a lot of treatments for AMD. Now, I'm calling it AMD, but what does that actually stand for? I know the MD stands for macular degeneration. What's the A stand for?
So the A stands for age-related macular degeneration.
Age-related. So AMD, age-related.
Diagnosis.
Okay. God, yeah. Well, I want to speak the right lingo, you know.
you're speaking it well.
Because I'm just a dummy. Ranges from vitamins to lasers and to injections. Mm-hmm. There are also, like you said, low vision tools and trainings. So can you provide some kind of overview on how low vision equipment, and that's another thing, I mean, why do they call it low vision? So low vision equipment can help the AMD patient. Does that just mean that they can see, but they're not blind, or they can just, they don't have 100% vision? Is that why you say low vision?
Yeah, I do. I kind of interchange it. So low vision really is when somebody gets to the point where their vision can't be corrected by, surgery and regular glasses aren't working for them any longer. They're considered low vision. And so there's that designation so that they can get services because they have that diagnosis. And so one of the things that, you know, I would encourage anybody really with a visual impairment where they're having problems, you know, doing anything, activities, daily living, you know, they should really seek out and visit a low vision clinic, which can be found in most communities. And they in the low vision clinic, you know, they'll have an ophthalmologist, an optometrist, and an occupational therapist. And it's really there that somebody will find out what devices are available for the things that they want to do. So we're looking at, you know, really training and using magnifiers and adaptive devices. And when you think about low vision optical devices, you can kind of break it into for near activities, you know, such as reading and sewing and writing, and also distant activities like driving or, you know, recognizing signs in the community or watching TV. For somebody who's looking for, you know, something to help them with reading, it could be something as simple as reading glasses with high-powered lenses. So these lenses are higher than, you know, what you might find at Walmart and, you know, CVS, the local drugstores. And they're available by prescription only.
Is it like my dentist who looks like he's got two telescopes on his glasses?
So it's funny because some of the distant devices can be telescopes like you're describing. So there can be, you know, telescopes that people will wear for watching sports or for watching TV. Yeah.
Wow. So these places you're describing, they can also diagnose a simple need of cataracts too, right? The low vision?
Right. So they will, they can, you know, certainly be able to determine whether somebody has a cataract and talk to them about maybe the pros and the cons of having that cataract removed. You know, as I mentioned, somebody with vision who might be legally blind, they're not going to get the, likely not going to get the great outcomes that somebody with better visual acuity will get.
Do you recommend that they get the cataract surgery anyway, or it's kind of not worth it?
It really is up to the medical doctor, the MD, either the retina or the cornea doctor and the patient. But I think, you know, the thinking in terms of will it benefit them and how much will it benefit them, you know, and are there other options is definitely, you know, a conversation that they have.
Yeah, because surgery is not easy, especially if you're over 75.
Yeah. Exactly. It is. It's, you know, and with every surgery, there's a risk anyways, right?
Yeah.
So
they sign all these forms, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you got to go through, you know, get an EKG. I mean, the tests that you got to go through just to have a surgery are, like, amazing. You know, blood tests and this and that. And it's like, oh, my gosh, I hope I pass all these tests so I can get my surgery.
I know, it is. My mom just had her cataracts removed, and she had to go through all those tests. And, you know, she's like, why do I have to go through all these appointments? I'm healthy. I'm fine. I just don't understand it. And for insurance purposes, obviously. But
they want to cover their butts.
They do. Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention, if I could, with somebody visiting a low vision clinic, you know, that is where they can really work one-on-one with a therapist to learn how to use their side vision, you know, where they can look around that central blind spot. Yeah, and also it's a place where they can get additional resources and support about, you know, what is available for people who have visual impairment.
Interesting. So let's talk about support groups. There's support groups for everything out there, cancer, stroke, you name it, dementia, Alzheimer's. I would assume that there is a support group for AMD.
Yes, there is. And, you know, actually, we all like to be able to talk with other people and give and receive that support, you know. So with macular degeneration, there are specific sites that you can go and visit. There are national organizations such as the National Eye Institute, and they have printed material in large print. They also have DVDs that are available for patients. Other publication and newsletters such as the American Foundation for the Blind, the National Association for the Visually Handicapped, Bright House, just Bright Focus Foundation and caregiver.com, right? But another thing that I'd like to mention is the local support. So in each community, you know, you can find local support for macular degeneration through the Lions Club, through the Commission for the Blind, or lighthouses. Yeah. Many of the outpatient hospitals have low vision support groups. Also, universities who have optometric and ophthalmic divisions also will have support groups as well.
Interesting. Well, despite all the treatments for AMD, I guess some patients will progress to the point where pretty soon they're blind in both eyes, right? Can you describe how caregivers might help these particular patients?
Yeah. You know, we talked about as that disease progresses and the blind spots get bigger, you know, the people who are affected by that, they really will need more assistance in completing those activities of daily living that we talked about. You know, meal preparation, financial management, you know, paying bills and balancing checkbooks. And, you know, what about medication management? You know, generally, you know, they have other comorbidities, and are they able to, you know, accurately give their medications and follow their medication plan? And also, you know, getting around their environment. Generally, people are pretty good inside their home, but when they're outside in unfamiliar areas, they're going to need some help. It's kind of during this time that people will start to withdraw from the activities that they previously enjoyed. You know, they'll become more and more isolated. So it's really important, I think, for family members or caregivers to look at ways to help them stay connected, you know, whether it's through a support group or a community activity or even just visiting them more frequently.
Well, that sounds good. Well, listen, we're up on our second break, so why don't you just take a rest here for a couple of minutes, and we will be right back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back with Karen Murphy, and we're talking about macular degeneration. Karen, I wanted to ask you, how did you first decide that this was the field that you wanted to go into?
That's a good question. I was actually working as an industrial therapist. So I was working with people who were injured after work-related injuries. I started to see people who had eye injuries. They're really, in my organization, we really didn't have anybody that was specializing in this field. So that together with my dad being diagnosed with macular degeneration really made me feel that I needed to get more education on the topic, which then spurred me to get certified in the field and look for different options to be able to practice in the visual impairment field.
Cool. So how's your dad doing now?
Well, my dad actually isn't with us any longer. However, he did get to the point, no thank you, he did get to the point where, you know, he was an avid reader and he loved reading. And he was able to continue with reading, learning to use eccentric viewing, and also different magnifying devices. Yeah, yeah. So he was able to read up until the end.
So I bet you anything that you were doing some reading to him as well, no?
Right. So there was a point where we were reading to him, first when his vision was poor, and then again, you know, right towards the end. That was something that he really wanted to continue to do on his own. And he found a way to do it. And actually, if he was still here, he would probably be that patient trying to get the telescope implant because he just really wanted to continue to be involved in those types of activities.
So he never made it to the telescope implant, huh?
No, he didn't, but I'm sure he's watching from above and, you know, giving me the high five and the thumbs up signal.
So what did he end up dying from?
He actually ended up dying from lung cancer.
Oh, and you bring up a good point, you know, because chances are someone with macular degeneration, that isn't their only problem. They commonly have other issues going on as well. So that makes it so much harder for them and for the caregiver because they're like, okay, I've got five issues dealing with here, and the stress and the frustration is just incredible. But you brought up a great idea for reading to the caregiver, reading to the patient whose vision is just, you know, too much work. But tell us about the good news. Tell us about this telescope implant thing and how that can improve the quality of life and how the technology works, you know, and having the support of a caregiver and all of that stuff with technology.
Sure. Great. So the telescope implant is one of the newest treatments for age-related macular degeneration, and it's the only
FDA-approved surgical. How new is it?
2012. Yep, 2012.
That is new.
Yep, it is new. It's the only FDA-approved surgical option as well. So, you know, it's not a cure, as we talked about before. There isn't a cure for this disease, but it has been proven to restore vision and improve quality of life, right? So there are some criteria that the patient has to meet. One of them is age. So it's made for people who are 65 years and older and have age-related macular degeneration. There are other health requirements that have to be met at the MD level with the optometrist and ophthalmologist. And they have to have a cataract in the eye. So remember, we remove the cataract to implant the telescope implant. So for now, there has to be a cataract.
Really?
Yeah.
But the odds of having a cataract are pretty high when you're in this risk group, right?
The odds of having a cataract are high as we age. So at 65, it can be very likely that people have cataracts. Now, whether they've been removed or not, you know, is a different question.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be in bad condition, because they diagnosed my wife's cataract a few years before they took it out. They said, well, it's in there, you know, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. But if it's if it's not that bad, they can take him out early, right?
Yeah, they try to wait until the cataract is what they call ripe, so ready to be taken out. So like we talked about earlier, to the awareness of leaving a cataract in someone's eye who has age-related macular degeneration and poor vision, they're more likely to leave the cataract in, because taking it out doesn't really give them the improved visual acuity that they're looking for.
Yeah, so you're saying they will do the implant telescope and leave the cataract in?
No, I'm saying that it has to be a criteria. The patient has to have a cataract, so the cataract can be removed and the telescope can be put in.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
The telescope itself is very small, so it's about the size of a pea. The implant goes into only one eye. The implants will be used for recognizing people's faces, anything detailed, reading, recognizing signs in the distance, writing, watching TV. The other eye, which isn't implanted, it can be used for mobility. So we call it the patient's GPS eye. It gets the patient around the environment, and then the patient will use the telescope to really identify what it is they're looking at. Once the telescope is in the eye, what it does is it projects an image onto the back of the retina, and it magnifies the images three times. Whatever the person's looking at is going to be three times bigger. So that magnification hits the healthy areas of the retina, and it helps to minimize that blind spot that's there. The perception of the blind spot is smaller, so somebody can identify what they're looking at.
Interesting. So it makes the hole, the black hole, kind of look smaller, or the illusion of it getting smaller, because everything else is getting bigger.
Right.
Ingenious.
Because everything else around it is magnified, so it makes the blind spot appear smaller. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm a little confused. If you've got two different visions in each eye, do they kind of overlap, or does the person have to close one eye to see the telescope vision, or does he have to close that eye to see, I mean, or is it work if he keeps them both open?
So it's a process. The patient, after they have the telescope implant, they go through vision rehab. They'll go through the program for about 3 to 5 months afterwards to learn how to use their new vision. Because you're right, you know, you have one eye who has normal vision, and the other eye has that three times magnified image. So
I bet it's hard to get
used to. The patient has to learn. It is. It's an adjustment. The patient has to learn how to use the telescope. It takes a little bit of time for the brain to even, you know, acknowledge this magnified image and what is this all about. But generally, by the time a patient is done with the rehab program, you know, they're able to watch TV with both eyes open for varying amounts of time. So one person maybe 20 minutes, one person maybe 2 hours. If they lose that image, they just have to kind of implore a wink on the other eye to bring that magnified image back in again. They learn to alternate between those two images depending on the task that they're doing. Let's say somebody goes to the grocery store. You know, while they're walking around the grocery store, they're looking at everything through their non-implanted eye. And if they wanted to spot a sign or maybe something on the grocery store, they will switch and look at that image with their magnified image. It is a process, but patients are very happy afterwards with the ability to be able to recognize things that they weren't able to see before. Particularly loved ones' faces, you know, grandchildren that they haven't seen. The social aspect of it has been reportedly, you know, the patients report that they love that part of it.
Well, I'm seeing this image of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator, with his little eye, telescope eye. Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of like monovision. What we say, monovision on steroids, you know, because you've got you have these two different images. But the brain is an amazing thing, and, you know, research has shown that it adapts even as we age. So, you know, you can learn to use your vision differently. It's just, you know, it's just a process.
Yeah, I'm 61, and I've been blessed to still have good vision. I still don't wear glasses just for reading, and the print has to be really, really small too. I can read without glasses. But about a month ago, after I had an accident on my bicycle, car hit me, I was seeing these flashes of light, and I was concerned. Oh. I was looking on the internet, and it says, you know, get to an emergency center immediately because maybe your retina is detaching and this and that. Well, they did all these tests, and they says, well, you know, it's just old age or part of the aging process that sometimes these flashes of light, some kind of fluid was having an issue. And so apparently I'm all right. Mm-hmm. The flashes stopped, and I'm still seeing good. But it must be really hard to lose your vision. I can't even imagine not being able to see a beautiful sunset, the trees, the mountains, and so on, or your loved one.
Right, exactly. And I mean, just the day-to-day things that you do that you rely on vision, it's our first sensory system that we use, you know, in our life. It's our vision. And so you can just, you know, imagine every little thing that you do throughout the day and the frustration when a visual impairment sets in.
Well, I'm sure when they figure out how to transplant eyeballs, you'll be right there helping them.
Yes, I will try to be.
Now, what are your recommendations for caregivers helping their loved ones manage the AMD? Got any tips?
You know, we talk a lot about different ways that a caregiver can help with the environment and making sure that they go to low vision clinic to see what other type of devices are available to them. But I think really it's just learning as much as you can about macular degeneration, because, you know, the more you know, the less anxiety you'll feel when you're trying to help them and support them. The other thing that I would say is definitely make sure that your loved one gets an annual eye exam. They want to look at the retina to see if there are any changes to the tissue. And also you can find out what other new techniques or optical devices are available for them. I think that it's really important for caregivers to just try to keep their loved ones engaged in activities as much as possible, so that depression is a very prevalent thing with macular degeneration.
Yeah.
It's the isolation that happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, join those support groups, because it's not only good for your loved one, but it's also good for you too. You know, being around other people who are dealing with the same type of things and finding education is important. Tasks that might help someone else could possibly help you as well. You know, really encouraging their independence and making sure that you don't burn out as a caregiver. You have to remember to have time for yourself. Make sure that you're taking care of you as well, but continue to be open to different strategies and technologies that might be able to, you know, help your loved one remain independent as long as possible.
Mm. So what can a caregiver do to help their loved one who has the telescope implants? Is there anything that they need to do about that to help them to become accustomed to it?
Yeah, because, you know, there is that transition period where, you know, the patient is getting used to having that telescope implant. And so support and that time frame is really important. And also, once a patient gets a telescope implant, they can't drive anymore. So they're going to need support and assistance, to get to their therapy appointments and, you know, to go to the grocery store, to go to their medical appointments. But, you know, also, as the patient is going through the rehab program, they're learning to use that telescope in a new way. So they're learning to use how to spot objects and how to start reading with the telescope implant. And so they have different activities that they have to do, and that's certainly something that a caregiver can get involved in and just motivating and supporting them to get through that process.
So they have homework.
They do. Yes, they do. They have homework, and it's really one of the reasons why the rehab program, you know, is 3 to 5 months long. You know, for a traditional, let's say, hip replacement, it's the same amount of visits, you know, anywhere from 10 to 12 visits, but our patients don't come in every week. They are usually seen in the clinic every 2 weeks because they go home and they practice using the telescope. They don't need to be, with a therapist during that time. And so that's why, you know, the sessions are about the same. It's just bumped out in time because we need to have them practice using the telescope at home and in their environment.
Have you ever had any cases where maybe an impatient patient was having problems coping with the new implants and wanted you to take them out, but, you know, they hung in there, and then eventually they loved them, and they can't believe they even said that they were impatient enough to not just do it so that, you know, they can get used to it. Anything like that?
Sure. Yeah, we have had patients who have expressed exactly those sentiments. One of our patients, actually, who was one of the very first patients, was not happy with the telescope initially and, you know, wanted to have it removed. He stuck with the program and with the telescope, and he's now one of our most outspoken telescope advocates, and he's one of our ambassadors. So we do have an ambassador program where patients can call in and talk to other patients who have gone through the process. So they can talk to them before the telescope implant, and they can talk to them after the telescope implant, because, you know, they are unique in their experience that they are going through, and so they can support each other in that way. So the other thing that I wanted to mention was there was another patient who experienced impatience in the telescope implant process, and his name is Jim Heineman. He's the owner of the Jiffy Lube company, and he has since written a book that is available, and it's called Was Blind But Now I See. And it's really about his diagnosis, his coping mechanisms as he went through, you know, macular degeneration and his loss of vision and how it affected his life. But he talks about, you know, all the different optical devices that he tried and then his decision to have the telescope implant. It really is a very comprehensive book. And, I mean, he wrote it on his own. It has no, you know, VisionCare had no part in helping develop that, but it's another way that patients can understand the process and reach out for support. We've got lots of testimonials on our website for anyone who is interested in the telescope implant.
So you have actually started your brand new subgroup of caregivers of people who have these devices implanted in their eyes. Amazing.
Yes, the ambassador program. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
It's all about support groups. You know, I tell caregivers that every single time, that when you find somebody who's going through what you're going through, you know, who maybe is a little further down the road, because it's so easy to lose hope. It's so easy to get depressed. So easy to get frustrated. Yeah. And once depression gets in, it's tough to get rid of it. I mean, that's part of the grief process. You know, first there's denial. This isn't happening to me. Then there's anger. Oh, my God, this is happening to me. And you know, they're angry with everybody and everything and God and the hospital and the doctor. And then they start going into bargaining, and then, you know, they eventually will get to acceptance, and it's a great place to be. And they just have to understand that grief is a process. Like I said at the beginning of my show, you have to go through it. Can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go under it. You got to go through it. So I would highly recommend to the caregivers and to the patient of these devices, just be patient. And maybe that's why they call them patients, because they have to be patient.
And it's hard to be patient, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the support is critical. And, you know, especially for these telescope patients, it is a new procedure, and it is a new way of thinking and using your vision. For our ambassador program, you know, we can talk to the people about what they can expect and the process of going through the treatment option.
Sure.
But really and truly, unless you've got somebody else who's already gone through it, they can speak peer-to-peer and give more understanding and relay more information,
right.
I think. It's heard better.
Well, I can't believe the hour is up. It went so fast. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you, Karen, how would they do that?
We have a website. It's called centrasight.com. I'll spell that. It's CENTRASIGHT.com. We also have an 800 number, which is 1-877-997-4448. There are patient brochures. There are patient education videos. There are patient stories that are available. There's also a link to our Facebook page, which can be accessed through the centrasight.com website.
Well, Karen, thank you again for allowing me to interview you. It was great. I learned a lot. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday live at noon. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts. You can listen to them on the same link any time of the day, 24/7. Also on our website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, and the shortcut, CaregiversCaregiver.com. Try saying that fast three times. And you get to listen on iTunes as well from my website's radio show tab. By the way, when you're on my website, don't forget, take the quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, so that you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.